Well, my property tax statement and bill arrived in the mail just yesterday, as a matter of fact. It's a reminder, let's put it that way, tax time is, this is it. We're down to the end of the year, and you need to have made your donations and lots of other things as well done by the end of the year, as we will find out when we visit with Dale Cuden. Dale's a certified public accountant, a certified information technology professional. She holds an MS in accounting science from UW-Madison, has over 20 years experience as an accounting professional. She works in public accounting, private industry, government, education, and she's a partner with Wegner LLP, CPAs and consultants, right here in Madison. Great to have her with us. It's her first visit to the program, and probably not the last. We're really pleased to have her here today. And you may have some questions about your taxes. And if you do, I hope you'll join in. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or post a question on my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. You can do it right there. Dale Cuden, welcome.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Great to have you with us. What needs to be done before the end of the year? I know, now in our case, we're going to pay our property tax bill and get it done before the end of the year so we can deduct that off our taxes for 2011. But there are other things, too.
Well, basically, for individual taxpayers, pretty much everything has to be done by the end of the year.
Yeah.
They're based on cash basis. Once December 31st passes, you're out of options.
You're out of luck.
There are a couple exceptions. You were talking about charitable contributions, and you can make the charitable contributions if the charitable organization accepts them through credit card. And you don't have to pay your credit card until whatever you and the credit card company agree on. But you get, if you make the charge on your credit card, any of the charges by the end of the year are deductible. Mm-hmm. And but the payments that the individual taxpayers can deduct have to be made by December 31st. I always get asked, well, what if the check's in the mail? Can I write the check on December 31st and hold it? And there's a constructive receipt issue. If you put it in the mail, and it pretty much, it's
you're
okay.
Fine.
But it's not going to work if on January 5th you decide to write your check and date it December 31st, although some people try.
I was thinking this past week we had a fund drive here, and I donated additional money or contributed additional money, and I put it on my credit card. So
that's deductible.
I won't pay it until next month, but it's deductible. Mm-hmm. That's fine. Okay.
Yeah, the credit card, for any expense, even a business that wants to deduct regular expenses, if they make them on the credit card by the end of the year, it doesn't matter when you pay the credit card.
Okay.
So the issue about your property tax bill, I get asked the question all the time, should I pay it before the end of the year? Should I pay half of it? Can I do the pay part in January and the other part in July? And that's really a strategy issue. If you are going to be able to itemize deductions, then it makes sense to pay it by the end of the year. If you're straddling, I have not quite enough to make itemized deductions, which this year is $5,800 for an individual and about twice that for a couple.
Yeah.
And if you have enough deductions by not making them this year and make them all in 1 year, kind of bunch them together, you can get the advantage of the itemized deduction. So you really need to look at what total deductions you have, whether it makes sense to make that payment, all of it, part of it, by the end of the year, or if you're going to bunch them, you may wait until January to make it, and then December of 12 you would make it also, and then you would have twice as much to deduct.
And I have some friends who actually do this every other year. Everything, their church donation, all their contributions, they do it every other year.
And that's why they're doing it, because they otherwise would not be able to itemize their deductions. So they're taking the standard deduction in the alternate year.
Yeah. And I frankly don't have the, I don't know, maybe I'm just not smart enough, or maybe I see too many things I want to contribute to, and I don't want to put it off, so I don't. Oh, man. So I don't think it would ever work for me, but it does work for a lot of people, and that's great. That's wonderful. I tell you, we have lots of callers to visit with you and with questions. And again, I'll remind you the number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call. Justin in West Allis up first. Justin, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. I don't know if you folks are familiar with the MF Global scandal that went on.
Yes.
We sure are.
Well, I was one of the lucky clients.
Oh, dear.
And so they have a restoration of 72% of the funds at this point, which means I'm facing losses of 28% for this year. And I was looking at the publication 550, and it looks like it comes under insolvency or bankruptcy of financial institution. And it says I can take this as an ordinary loss or a casualty loss. Under ordinary losses, it says the maximum amount I can claim is $20,000. Is that the maximum forever or just for this year? In other words, can I carry forward the losses? And then I have another question.
Losses can be carried forward, but I'm going to have to defer on the question of the 20,000 limit, because the losses are used in a year to offset income, and anything that's not used up is carried forward to the next year. So if you had $20,000 of losses and $10,000 of income, you would only use up part of it and carry it forward. So I'm not quite sure about your reference to the maximum that you can deduct is the $20,000.
Okay. That's just what it says, maximum amount you claim is $20,000. And I'm wondering if this year, I'm not sure about the... if this was a Bush-era tax thing or not, but it was in the past that 10 or 15% brackets did not have to pay capital gains taxes. Is that still the case?
Yes, that is still the case. The capital gains rate is 0% for taxpayers whose regular tax rate, ordinary income tax rate, is in the 10 or 15% bracket, and that still is in effect for 2011, and yes, it was part of the tax breaks from that era that have been extended one more year, mm-hmm. and we don't know what Congress is going to do going forward.
That. Yep, there you go. Thanks, Justin, for calling. Appreciate it. John in Brookfield, let's turn to you now. Hi, John.
Hello. Thanks for letting me be on the air.
Sure.
I'm just going to continue the previous conversation about the capital gains taxation. And I, to be honest with you, I've asked two CPAs the same question, and I got two different answers.
Okay.
And that is, and I'm going to paint a scenario. Let's say we have a business owner who retires. He now has dropped his income way down to, so he's effectively in a 0% or maybe 10% tax bracket, and he sells his closely held corporation, which he has a huge capital gain on. Because he started it when he was 20, let's say. And now, that large capital gain, is that also added into his income to determine if he's still in the 0% capital gains tax band? Or does he pay no taxes?
Capital gains tax rates are figured separately. So the answer is that, amazingly, it never fails to amaze me when I'm going through the process of the return. I say, how can this be? This person had this huge capital gain, and they have no taxes to pay, but it's because their ordinary income was at that 10% or 15% rate, and that's the way the law reads.
Oh.
Well, that's great news.
You got a big smile on your face, John.
Yes, something good for the day. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling.
How does that answer compare to the... to the other answers you got?
He's already oh. gone with a big smile on his face and headed to the bank. Oh, man. Jennifer and Madison, it is on to you now. Hi, Jen.
Hi. I have my own small business, and I never really know what my taxes are going to be until I get my TurboTax out come March and start filling in the forms. I've been paying estimated taxes based on last year's income, but because my income fluctuates all over, I now know that I'm going to owe more this year. Am I going to have to pay penalties? And how do I next year estimate or pay estimated taxes not knowing what I'm going to be earning at all next year?
Well, the way to avoid penalties is to pay in what we call, for your estimates, what we call safe harbor estimates, which means based on what your actual liability was in 2010, if you pay in at least that amount during 2011, then no matter what your tax liability is in April, you wouldn't have a penalty on it. You would have to pay the additional taxes. And that works real well in years when your income is going up. Because as long as you've paid that amount from last year, you're safe. When your income is going down and you base it on last year's, then the risk is you're going to pay in too much. Now, you'll get that back as a refund if it's too much, but it isn't as easy or as simple to get that safe amount. The rule is that you pay 100% of the prior years or 90% of the current years, but as you say, most business owners don't know what their 90% is until they've crunched through the numbers.
Yeah.
And so... The way to avoid the penalty is to pay in what your tax liability was the year before.
So she could do that now before the end of December.
Actually, the estimated tax payments, the fourth quarter estimated payment is due January 15th.
Oh, so she's still got...
It counts for 2011 as far as what your payments go. If you're making estimated payments to the state and you are... itemizing deductions and able to deduct your state income taxes, you can only deduct as an itemized deduction the estimated payments that you actually made in 2011, mm-hmm. but you still have until January of 2012 to make your last quarterly estimate payment. Now, there is an additional penalty possible. If you don't make those payments, if you don't make them on time or evenly through the year.
Okay.
So so you have to make sure that you're meeting those requirements. If your income actually fluctuates during the year because you have a busy season or something, then you just have to file an extra form showing the seasonality of your income and that your payments basically match that seasonality instead of evenly through the year. But in other words, if you make a big payment at the end of the year or by January 15th, you can avoid the penalty for underpayment, but you may not avoid a penalty for timely payment.
Timely payment. All right. There you go, Jen.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot for calling. Dale Kunin, our guest today, certified public accountant, and a partner with Wegner LLP, CPAs and Consultants in Madison, our guest today as we talk about your taxes. Give us a call with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show and you can post a question there. I am Larry Mueller, Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us as we talk taxes today and tax preparation with Dale Kunin. She's a certified public accountant with Wegner LLP, CPAs and Consultants in Madison. Great to have her here. By the way, we have a link to their page, their Facebook page, or their website on my Facebook page. So if you go to the Larry Mueller Show and you want to learn more about Wegner, you can do that just to click on that link, and we'd be glad to help you out there. We have an email from Joe who is about to take a sales job that would require him to use his own vehicle for sales calls. Like to know how to write off the mileage on his taxes.
If you are a commission salesperson and you're getting your compensation in terms of a 1099, in other words, you're not an employee, you're an independent contractor, the way that you get your deductions is you keep track of your business miles. Keep a little log in your car and write down where you're going and the mileage when you have a business trip or business call. And then you're going to add up all of your miles at the end of the tax year. What the IRS requires you to report is your total miles for the year, your business miles for the year, and the difference, which is your non-business miles. Mm-hmm. And then, you can get you can take a deduction in, for 2011, it's 55 cents a mile, and based on that business mileage. And that deduction would go on your Schedule C if you are an independent contractor, and you would be able to, it would reduce not only your taxable income, but your self-employment tax income. If you are an employee and you're getting a W-2 and your mileage is not being reimbursed by your employer, you would go through the same process of maintaining your records. The IRS wants you to have records. Mm-hmm. And then you would deduct it as a business expense, which unfortunately, as for an employee, is subject to, it's a miscellaneous itemized deduction. No. And there are thresholds. So you can only deduct that which is more than 2% of your adjusted gross income as a miscellaneous itemized deduction, so there's less opportunity to deduct it that way.
Joan in northern Wisconsin, we are on to you. Hi, Joan. Thanks for calling.
Hi there. We gave a personal loan to our son for his business. That was probably maybe covered about like 8 years or so. They only paid the interest on the loan, but they didn't pay anything toward the principal. This past spring, they signed bankruptcy, so the business is gone. And each year we would file the interest that we had received from them. I'm wondering now, on what schedule do I report this to the IRS? And the total was $27,000 that remained. We had forgiven other funding for this, but $27,000 was signed into the bankruptcy papers. And I'm wondering how much of that loss can we take off each year, and I'm wondering what schedule we use to report this.
This is a bad debt, a business, it's actually considered a non-business.
Well, it was a business.
But you loaned it to your son for the business, but you aren't a business.
No, we are not the business. It was to his business.
All right, so it's a personal loan business.
We are a personal because we're parents, but it was to the business.
Right, but you didn't. If you had a business,
we didn't have the business. No.
Yeah, if you had Joan's business and you wrote the check from Joan's business. Mm-hmm. That would be one thing.
It was just from his parents to him.
Okay.
It was to his business.
To his business, though. It was written to the business.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, good. So it was written to the business. Does that help, Dale?
Yes. So you can get a deduction if you had if it's in bankruptcy. So when you can show that you're not going to get the key is you have to show proof or have proof that you're not going to get paid back.
Yeah, I know that part. Yes.
And so you can deduct it, and it would go on a Schedule D.
D as in David?
Yes.
Okay.
And
do you have to deduct the whole thing in 1 year, or can you take...
Well, it's going to work the same as other losses.
Okay.
That it's not going to be so your losses are limited to your income.
Oh, okay.
And you can carry forward what you haven't used up.
Yeah. Okay, gotcha.
Okay, now would you just according to our income? See, the total loan that was remaining was $27,000, and that has been signed away as bankruptcy, and that
right.
There is no possibility we're going to get anything, period. So now how much of that $27,000 can I take off each year? Like, say, do I have to do it all in 1 year? Can I take it off for several
years? You report it all at once, and then the rest of your... income or gains and losses will determine how much you can use up in the year. But you report it in the year that it's
that
worthless.
It yeah.
I recorded in the year that what?
That it's worthless.
Okay. Well, it was worthless this spring.
Okay.
So then you report the whole thing. And it's you report it all in... on your 2011 return, but it's going to be treated as if it was a capital loss. And so the rules for capital loss, if you don't have capital gains, mm-hmm. that so if you have no capital gains and you report the $27,000, mm-hmm. you would be able to take $3,000 in 2011, and then the rest of it would carry forward to the next year. And you can take $3,000 a year in excess of any a loss that exceeds any gains that you have. So gains would if you had gains, they could offset it to the whole amount of $27,000. But if you have none, then you're going to be limited to the $3,000 a year.
There you go. Good luck. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. And more callers online. Let's go to Joan in Shorewood. Hi, Joan.
Hello. I have three issues, and I'll leave the last one that pertains to Shorewood and the big flood till end. The simple question is, I make deductions I pay in income estimates 4 times a year, and the person who called before said the last one was not due until January 15th. But if I pay that this year, I will get credit on my taxes for this year, why not?
Yes, you will get, you get the state tax deduction in the year that you pay that estimate. So if you pay your fourth quarter estimate in December for the state, you will get to deduct that as part of your itemized deductions for 2011. If you wait and make it in January, then it will count as an itemized deduction in 2012, but the payment counts for your 2011 taxes.
Okay. My second question is on, I applied for Social Security B this year, and I got a notice that I would be paying, I don't know, $40 or $50 more unless I could prove that my 2010 income was less than my 2009. 2009, I guess I was getting more interest than $1.27 a month on $100,000 invested. So I think it would go down, but what do I have to do for that? Send them in my tax receipts?
Yes, I would start with your tax returns.
Okay.
They may want other information, but and one would think that they could look it up, but the agencies don't share their computers.
And my third one is Shorewood. Shorewood had a horrible flood last year, and my whole basement had to be removed. All of the very fine rooms, the walls, everything, the shelving, all of the things I had. I had insurance, and the insurance man came, took one look, and he said, "Oh, it's obvious you get payment." So I got a check for $5,000, but I did not get any itemized paper at all. And my neighbor had a different insurance company, and they came and itemized. My accountant said, "Well, you can don't do that now. Take an extension and pay that later. Figure it out next year and get your taxes in." So I did. And by golly, I got a refund a couple weeks ago that will help me pay my taxes. At least that's an advantage of taking a late payment. But my question is, what do I do? He said, you have to know that your basement is it worse? How much worse is it now than it was the day before the flood? Well, everything has been removed, and I have not done all of the repairs. I mean, to restore it would cost a great deal of money to redo the walls, to rebuild, let alone all of the material things that I took pictures of that were destroyed, 7 dumpsters worth. How do I go about doing this?
Well, your accountant was right. The deduction that you're entitled to is the amount of what it was worth before the casualty and the amount it was worth after the casualty. But if you received insurance money for it, then the difference is reduced by that insurance payment. So you do have to get some sort of valuation if you are saying that the $5,000 didn't make you whole.
Yeah. So if you had, let's say, $20,000 in real losses, but you only got $5,000 in insurance, you'd have a claim on $15,000 then.
That's possible, but it's based on not what you paid for the...
Right, what the value is.
What the value was before the casualty.
Yeah,
the
sometimes
event.
The value could go up, but more often it's going
to
go
down. More often it's down.
It's going the other direction,
yeah.
Probably 99% of the time. So there you go, Joan. Good luck. Thank you so much for calling. Appreciate your call. And lots of callers here. Steve in Madison, it is your turn. Hi, Steve.
Good morning. I am retired. I've been living on my pension and my Social Security. And that's brought me an adjusted income of around $20,000 a year. The question I have is, this last year, I did some consulting work and was paid roughly $1,000 for doing that. I've never had to deal with anything like this before. So I guess my basic question is, do I treat that $1,000 as regular income and just add it in with everything else? And also, can I make a contribution to my IRA based on that $1,000?
Mm-hmm. So the $1,000 you received for your consulting is considered self-employment income. So you have to report it as self-employment income,
mm-hmm.
and you have to pay self-employment taxes on it. And the self-employment taxes are roughly 15%. The payroll tax cut that we got this year, it does get included in the self-employment taxes, so you save a couple percents there. But you do have to report it not as ordinary income, but as self-employment income. And what, I forget what your
Can I make a contribution to my regular IRA based on this?
Yes, you can. But it that will not are you more than 70 and a half years old?
No.
Okay. Yes, you can make the contribution. However, that will reduce your taxable income, but it won't reduce your self-employment tax income.
Right. Okay. Okay. So there's a special form I need to do that on?
You'll need the form SE for mm-hmm. self-employment taxes. If you have any expenses that you can apply against that consulting income that you earned, if it cost you anything to earn it, mileage or supplies,
then
you would report that on a Schedule C.
Okay. Well, the fee included all of that. So, I mean, they paid me for mileage and all that sort of thing.
Well, even if they paid you for it, you can deduct it from so you don't want to pay self-employment taxes on your mileage. And so you report it on the Schedule C as income, but then you report on the Schedule C your mileage and your paper and all of that, so that if you got $1,000 but 50 of it was mileage, then you're only going to have to pay self-employment tax on $950.
Okay. And you said something about it affecting my Social Security taxes?
Your self-employment taxes.
Oh, okay. But you said something about the recent legislation on...
Well, there was a payroll tax cut holiday, and that applies to half of the self-employment taxes as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, because I didn't pay any Social Security on it.
No, but you need to.
You will.
When you report it, that's what the self-employment tax is. It's the self-employed's version of your Social Security and Medicare taxes.
Oh, okay.
There you go.
All right, thank you.
Yep, good luck. Thanks for calling. Chris in Prairie Farm, on to you now. Hi, Chris.
Hi, how are you?
Great, thanks for calling. What can we do for you?
Well, I'm calling because we adopted a child this summer, and we brought her home in July. So our adoption won't be finalized until January. So I've heard two different answers from adoption professionals that, yes, we will be eligible, or no, we won't, for the adoption tax credit for 2011. And so if we have to wait till 2012, will it matter that our expenses started in 2009? Can we still claim all those expenses if we have to wait another year? So that's my question.
That's a very good question, and the adoption credit is a little bit complicated because you're not supposed to you're not entitled to it until the adoption is
final.
And mm-hmm. But you do get to apply the expenses that you had. And in some cases, go back and amend a prior year return. In this case, if you're actually, you know, the adoption's going to be final in January, mm-hmm. you'll have the information you need to prepare the 2011 return. And so you can get some credit on the 2011 return.
So we can claim our expenses up until December 31st?
Correct.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. So, okay, great.
Thank you. Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And Matt in Madison, it is your turn. Hi, Matt.
Hi, I'm a first-time home buyer, and I purchased my house back in mid-August of this year, and I was just wondering whether it would be better for me to pay my taxes this year and itemize my deductions this year, or to pay the property taxes in 2012, and take the standard deduction this year and itemize in 2012 then?
Well, the first thing you need to do is add up what your other potential itemized deductions are, which are your mortgage interest mm-hmm. that you've paid, your state taxes that have been withheld from your paycheck, and any charitable contributions that you have to see if you are getting up above the standard deduction
limit.
If you are you single?
I'm married, and we have one son.
So, for married filing joint, the standard deduction for 2011 is $11,600. So, do you have between your mortgage interest, your state income tax paid, charitable deductions, are you hitting that or not? Now, one thing to note for your property taxes, when you bought the house, on your closing statement, you got credited from the seller with the taxes through the date that you bought the house. I think you said you bought it in August.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So when you got your property tax bill today or yesterday or whenever mm-hmm. it came, and if it was $5,000, you aren't entitled to deduct all of that $5,000, even
right,
if you paid it.
Only from August on.
Yes, so you have to subtract what they credited you on your closing statement.
Okay.
So then you want to add those together and see if you're above $11,600, and if you're not, then you can wait until next year and pay it next mm-hmm. year, and you'll be bundling, as we talked about earlier in the show.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Thanks very much for calling, man. Appreciate your call. Dale Cuden, our guest today, certified public accountant in the firm, and she's a partner, by the way, in the firm of Wegner LLP, CPAs and Consultants in Madison. If you have a question for her, we have open lines. We get you on fairly quickly now at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go to my Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show, and you can file a question or a comment there. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking your taxes today, tax preparation with Dale Cuden of Wegner LLP, CPAs and Consultants in Madison. Great to have her with us, and thank you for listening in. Call us at 800-642-1234. Email talk@wpr.org. I do have an email from Georgia in Greenwood. It says, my mother died in May, and I, as her personal representative, put all her assets in an EIN. What is an EIN? An EIN is...
an employee... It's an EIN. I think she means she got a trust with an identifying number, but I'm not sure.
She had an annuity and an IRA. Will her estate pay the tax on those, or will the beneficiaries pay once they receive their share?
On the IRA, the beneficiaries are going to pay the income tax when they get their distribution based on whether they take it out over 5 years or cash it out all at once. The annuity, if there's earnings on the annuity while the estate is still open, then there has to be a tax return for the estate. And if there's distributions during that time, then the tax will flow to the people who received the distributions. And if there aren't, then the estate itself would have income taxes. But there wouldn't be any income taxes on the IRA until it's actually withdrawn. Earnings and everything are tax-free until it's actually distributed.
John in Waupaca, we are on to you. Hi, John. Thank you for calling.
Hey, good morning. Thank you. Just a clarification on capital gains. I sold a business 2 years ago in the state of Wisconsin, and I did pay capital gains taxes on the sale of the business. Is that correct?
Yes. Was it a corporation that you sold, and you sold stock on it, or
no? It was a Type S or an S corporation.
And did you sell the actual stock, or did you liquidate
yes.
the corporation and sell the assets?
We sold the assets. Well, actually, no, we sold the corporation. They took the name over and took the corporation.
So then, yes, then you sold stock and. Capital gains is the way that would be treated.
Would there have been a way to avoid capital gains taxes? Because I felt it was fairly high for a small business.
Without seeing all of the details, the option when you sell a business is to sell the assets of the business versus selling. The other option is to sell the stock. Most purchasers want to buy the assets, not the stock, and most sellers want to sell the stock and not the assets. So you have to come to whatever the agreement is. So if you sell the assets, usually there's ordinary income recapture that you have to report, and that's higher than capital gains. It sounds like you had a profitable exchange, and so you paid some taxes on it because it was profitable.
Yep.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks, John. And Mark in New Richmond, your turn. Hi, Mark.
Hi, good morning. My question is, I retired in June, turned 62 in September, and began receiving Social Security in November, so I've received it for 2 months. And my income for the first 6 months of the year was over the $14,000 limit. So my question is, will I be needing to pay tax on the 2 months of Social Security I earned?
Your taxes are based on your annual total income. So if your total income puts you in the position where your Social Security is taxable at 50% or 80% or 100%, then it's not prorated for how many months you received it. It's just what the total is, what your total income is at the end of the year.
So if I made over $14,000 during that first 6 months of the year, which I did, my Social Security benefit for the 2 months will be taxed.
Well, you have, I don't know if you're confusing what you, the Social Security limit that you can't earn a certain amount, you have to pay back benefits, or if you're talking about income tax.
Well, my understanding is once I begin receiving Social Security, I could make no more than $14,000 a year.
That has to do with, that's not a tax, that's whether your benefits are, you give up part of your benefits. So that's different from income tax.
Oh, okay.
And
that makes sense.
And I believe I don't know the specific formula without looking it up, but I think that that it is, that part is prorated, and that's not income tax. That's that's until you hit the actual retirement age. Your Social Security benefits are limited by how much you make.
Okay, that makes sense. Thank you for your information.
Yep.
Sure.
Thank you for calling. Peter in Stoughton, we're moving to you now. Hi, Pete.
Good morning. Of course, the cat's yowling at me now. we took a foreign exchange student in on kind of an emergency basis this year. He was with us from December to June. And I was wondering if there were what sorts of special tax implications might be there.
Was this foreign exchange student through an organization?
Yes.
Or?
Yes, it was.
Okay. Ability to take, there's a small amount that you can deduct for having a foreign exchange student. I'm sorry, I don't have that information at my fingertips. It's minimal. I think it's supposed to cover food or something. If the foreign exchange student came through a bona fide organization, not a private arrangement.
Okay. Yeah, I seem to recall it's around $500 or something like that, but I was wondering if you might have more information. And
I could.
Don't at the moment.
I would be glad to provide that information if you leave your information, or we can post it on the Facebook page.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. Or just contact directly, I suppose. If you go to the Facebook page, you'll see the contact for Dale.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, thanks very much for calling. Appreciate it. So he can get a hold of you.
Yes.
Shouldn't be any trouble at all there. Chris and Saner, it's on to you now. Hi, Chris.
Hello.
Hi. What can we do for you?
My wife and I just became eligible for Social Security and Medicare this year, and there's the deduction that they take out of your Medicare or your Social Security for Medicare, and then we pay for a Medicare supplement and then the drug supplement. Now, my question is, are these amounts or any of them allowed as helping you to reach the 7.5% floor to deduct medical expenses?
Yes, they are.
All three?
Yes, but it's a drop in the bucket.
Well,
but yes.
We won't go into that, but you have to, like I said, reach that floor. And
your medical premiums are.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Health insurance premiums are considered part of your medical expenses that you want to accumulate that exceed 7.5%.
Yes, and specifically, how about the amount that is taken out of your Social Security payment for Medicare?
That is a premium cost, yes.
Part of that, too?
Yes.
Yep.
Okay.
All right, thanks, Chris.
Thank you very much.
Linda in La Crescent, Minnesota. On to you. Hi, Linda.
Hi. Yeah, my question is, I have some stock in a company that paid dividends this year, and it was reinvested in the same company. And I'm just wondering if there's an IRA or, you know, some vehicle that I can put that dividend in so that I don't have to claim it as income.
Well, the dividend is taxable, and if you have earned income, you can contribute to an IRA within the limits. If you have a retirement plan at work, there's some income limits for contributing to your IRA, but you can't specifically take those dividends and invest them instead in an IRA. The IRA contribution is available, and it will offset all of your income to the extent that you make that IRA contribution, which is generally $5,000 as a maximum. So if you have an IRA, if you're eligible to make the IRA, and you have to have earned income in order to do it. If all of your income is from dividends, then you can't have an IRA. Then you certainly could reduce your taxable income by contributing to an IRA.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Very good. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thanks, Linda. And Nick in Green Bay, on to you. Hi, Nick.
Hi, thanks for having this show.
Sure.
I worked for a company for 7.5 years, and we lost the contract, so they didn't lay us off. They fired everybody in the company, and including the accountant, and I'm kind of concerned about my W-2. I know they have to legally give them to you, but I don't have any strong guys to go over there and grab them by the neck and say, give me my W-2. So how long do they have to get them to me after tax time? Tax season.
Well, they're due to you by January 31st of 2012. Technically, they're supposed to provide them when you terminate your employment, but...
Oh, really? I didn't even know that.
But the default is January 31st. So I'm not sure if the company does not exist, I don't know how you go about getting those W-2s.
What are my repercussions if they don't give them to me? Like, what can I do to get them?
Do you have
hard questions?
Do you have a pay stub that has your accumulated income and what your tax payments have been?
I do someplace at home, but I got two kids that tear everything apart, so I got no clue where it would be.
That's probably your best bet. they are required to provide them. I'm not sure. And you're required to report your income.
Yeah.
So if they're still in business.
No, they're not.
They're completely.
They're completely gone. There's nothing there.
No.
I don't know the answer to that.
Oh, great. That's what I was worrying about, because I get a huge tax return for my two kids. And, yeah.
Well, you can still report your income, and if you need to get a hold of that pay stub, because you're going to probably use that as your documentation.
Yeah.
Okay, well, thanks for being here to answer these questions, because I had no clue.
All right, good,
good luck.
Thank you very much for calling. Oh, that's a tough one, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know that I've
run across
that.
Yeah, and so, well, hopefully he can find his last pay stub, and that should be...
Well, he'll probably have to, yeah.
You'll have to explain it to
the
IRS,
right.
But...
Yeah, because they won't have a record. It depends what paperwork has been filed by the company, because they need a record of that his account was credited. But I think with his pay stub, he'll be able to accomplish the end.
And we'll have more after a look at the news. Stay with us. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio, talking taxes and tax preparation today with Dale Kunin, a CPA and a partner with Wegner LLP, CPAs and Consultants in Madison. We have a link on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show to their page. And so if you want to learn a little bit more about them, you can go right to that page. Lots of callers online with questions. And some emails as well. I think we'll go first, though, to the phones, and Helen in Big Bend. Helen, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. How are you doing?
Good.
Listen, I thought I scanned an article in the fall, and I put it aside to read later, about landlords being able to expense certain items. It's something new, I think. They haven't been able to do that in the past under Section, I think, 173. Instead of depreciating, and I was wondering if that's possible to do, like if you're doing an electrical upgrade from breakers or from fuse boxes to breaker boxes, if that's possible to expense that.
So there is a new benefit or opportunity for real estate in 2011 that in the past the costs for real estate related enterprises were not eligible, but Section 179, that is the
179, okay.
And there is an exception beginning in 2011. You can deduct up to $250,000 of qualified costs for restaurant buildings, improvements to interiors of retail, and leased non-residential buildings. So, if you have a apartment building that you're renting out, the rules did not change.
Oh, okay, all right, very good. Thank you.
Yep, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. So, if you're renting a home or renting an apartment to somebody, you can't really deduct.
You can deduct and you can depreciate, but the Section 179 is a special election to take all of the cost of some fixed asset in the year that you buy it.
And that was
greatly expanded for 2011 because the limit went up for businesses to $500,000. And it's going back down next year. But but residential real estate properties don't qualify. So if you buy a stove for the apartment you're renting out, you have to depreciate that over
time.
Over 5 years or 7 years, yes.
Steve in Duluth, Minnesota, it's your turn. Hi, Steve.
Hi. I'd like to know, how big of a mortgage do you have to be able to start itemizing your deductions?
Well,
most of the time, on the mortgage I had, it could never come. I never came close. But I've kind of figured it out what I think it is. But I'd sure love to have you tell me what you think. How big of a mortgage you gotta have to be able?
Well, it's not so much the size of the mortgage as the interest rate,
yeah,
and the pay. You know, how quickly it's being paid off, or the term of it. And again, the itemized deductions are an aggregate. So if you're single for 2011, it's $5,800. If you have a combination of mortgage interest, it's not the principal, it's the interest that you pay on the mortgage.
And taxes.
Property tax, real estate taxes, state income taxes, and charitable contributions that add up to more than $5,800, you can itemize deductions. If you're married, it's twice that. So it's not so much that the interest alone is going to
That's the vehicle that gets you there, though, for, you know, because most of us can't add up that many. If we didn't have a mortgage interest, you could not come close to that. Well, at least not.
Well, have property taxes would be considerable. I mean,
yeah, depending on the value.
I'm in Minnesota, not in, but.
Yeah, well, your property taxes might be lower. Yeah.
And it's your state income taxes that you pay.
Yeah, you get to deduct that as well. So you need to add that up, add that into it as well. And property taxes, I mean, $200,000 home in Madison, I know the property tax is going to be around $5,000. So
you're there.
You're almost there, right, on the property taxes alone. Scott and De Pere, it's your turn. Hi, Scott.
Hi. I sort of had a similar question. It was about my fiance and I just purchased a home together this last summer. And just wondering how that worked as far as dividing up the deductions for that for both first-time home buyers. So wondering how that would work since we're not married.
If you bought the home together and you're equal owners of it, and you are obligated for half of the expenses, then you're entitled to each deduct, you know, half of the mortgage and half of the real estate taxes. If one person is paying all of it, and they're not responsible for paying all of it, then you can't deduct. That one person can't necessarily deduct 100%. So it's the same kind of thing. If I was going to pay Larry's real estate taxes because I was really he really impressed me, so I was going to pay his real estate taxes.
And you can go right ahead and do that.
Right. I can't deduct that because I'm not obligated.
Gotcha.
So even if it is real estate taxes, I can't deduct it.
So you need to be paying it, each of you being...
You need to pay it and be... And it is your expense that you're paying for. Mm-hmm. So if you bought the house together and you're splitting it 50-50, then that's pretty much how the deductions have to go.
Okay.
Okay.
Thanks a lot. Yeah, appreciate it. And Mark in Gurnee, Illinois, your turn.
Hi, guys. I just happen to be playing with my tax estimates here for the upcoming year. And I found out that it's the last day for my wife to be changing her deductions. And lo and behold, I found you guys on the radio talking about the same stuff.
Cool.
So what I'm looking at is her, they call it TSP, but I guess it's the same as a 401k. And I've been telling her to raise it from 10% to 15%. And so I'm playing with those numbers here, and I want to know, is it valid to, or is it a good calculation to just look at the taxable income, year-to-date taxable income off her statement up to this point, and use that to try and guess how much I'm going to reduce my taxable income if I raise this from 10 to 15%? I see a net difference here in $4,600.
Well, I'm not sure that I'm quite following. What I would do is look at what your tax rate was last year, and if things are similar this year, then that tax rate, you know, if your marginal rate was 25%, then every dollar that you can reduce your taxable income, you save 25 cents.
Excuse me, I didn't mean to mention this, but I left it out. I'm using the tax table. I put everything in the calculation here. into the tax table, and so the table is showing me that currently her we're paying out like $11,000 in taxes, and if I raise that to 15% and take the difference and throw that into the table, you know, deduct it from the taxable income, it reduces our liability down to like $9,800. Is that a good guesstimate, or?
Well, what's that 5%?
Where's that from?
What's the 5% dollar amount?
It's $4,600 is the difference between 10 and 15%.
Then you're suggesting that your marginal rate is 50% if you're going to save $2,000 on reducing your taxable income by $4,000. So I don't think that that is getting you where you need to be.
No.
Okay.
You'd have to do a little more calculating there, I think. And thanks for calling, Mark. Appreciate your call. Email from Dawn in Madison. Our 25-year-old son moved home with us after college graduation this past spring. Minimum wage job, doesn't make enough to live on his own. He pays us a modest amount for staying with us, but we support him about 90%. Can we claim him on our taxes?
Well, first of all, if he graduated in 2011 and he was a full-time student in 2011, for 5 months of the year, then he qualifies as a full-time student for the whole year, and it doesn't make any difference what his own income is. So the fact that he graduated this year and he was one of those many that didn't get the job that that they were hoping for, he still can be a dependent. However, if he wasn't a full-time student, doesn't qualify for that, even though you're supporting him, your ability to claim him as a dependent is completely contingent upon how much he earns. And if he earns even a minimum wage job, most likely the $5,000, then you can't claim him as a dependent.
Hmm. There you go. We have Jim in Green Bay with us next. Hi, Jim.
Yes, how you doing?
Good.
Thank you for taking the call. Question is, on a traditional IRA, when you have gains or losses, I should say, selling stocks and bonds or whatever, my understanding, and I could be wrong on this, is you can't take the losses when you withdraw, but the gains are taxed. Is that correct?
Well, it's not precisely that way. On a traditional IRA, there is no tax until you take it out. And because all of the money that went in there was pre-tax, anything you take out is going to be taxed. So if you put in $3,000 of pre-tax money and there was only $2,000 left after the stock market deal, when you take the $2,000 out, it's still all taxable. You're not going to get taxed on $3,000. You're only going to get taxed on what you take out.
Hmm. Okay, but let's say before the meltdown, that money had come to $10,000. You made some trades and you took the losses on them, $2,000 or $3,000 worth of trades. When you do pull money out of there, why can't you take the losses that you did?
Because the money,
the gains that had gone up to $13,000 and you pulled it out, it's going to get taxed.
You're only taxed on what you take out. So anything that you take out is taxed.
Correct.
So it doesn't matter if it was a result of a gain or a loss. It's taxable because it's never been taxed before. So you're only going to get taxed to the extent of what you take out. You can't take out what you lost.
Yeah.
So sure how else to explain it.
No, that makes sense. Unfortunately, it's not the answer a lot of people would like to hear, but that's what happens when you have that IRA.
The IRA is outside of the tax gains and losses. You're not reporting them, you're not paying taxes on them or getting a loss carry forward on them. But when you take the cash out, that's when you get taxed.
That's when you pay. Carolyn in La Crosse, on to you. Hi, Carolyn.
Hi. I'm talking about the same thing, I think.
Oh, okay.
I would like to take some money out of my 401k. Mm-hmm. I'm over 69. And the money was in, for some reason, the money was put in there post-tax. So when I tried to take out $2,500, they told me I owed $89 federal tax. Do I owe that if it's post-tax?
Money in your 401k was post-tax. The only way that would be is if your 401k plan had a 401k Roth component, and so you could contribute to a 401k Roth as well as a traditional 401k. Otherwise, there would be no post-tax dollars in the 401k.
Somehow, mine's post-tax. And when I called before, he said, well, you might as well take this out because you don't owe anybody anything because the taxes are already out of it.
You need to go back to...
Then it must not be a 401k. Or it's a 401k Roth.
Oh, it's from my workplace.
Well, it could be either one. It could be a 401k Roth.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so if they would take out $87 in federal tax, would there be any way I could get that back if it was post-tax?
You'd have to file an amended return. Why don't you go back to the person that you're dealing with? There's got to be the person that you... At your workplace, I'd go back there and say, look, they're going to charge me tax on this. What's the deal? And check to see if it's a Roth, because if it's a Roth 401k,
then it is post tax.
Then it is post tax. If it's just a 401k, it is not post tax. They would not have taken out taxes on a 401k unless it was a Roth.
In the paperwork, though, that it's post-tax.
Well, if you can show that to the, you know, there's got to be a way you can explain that. I would go back and talk to the person at your place of employment. If it comes up with the IRS, if you've got paperwork that shows that it was pre-tax or post-tax, then you're going to get the money back.
And $89 is kind of an odd amount. So are you sure that that's a tax and not a fee?
It might have been a fee. And if it's a fee, you're out of luck.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, if it's a fee, you're really out of luck. And that might be what you've got there, Caroline. So you go back and take a look and see what it says. Good luck. Thank you for calling. We have question from Christine. Is there a published list somewhere of tax preparers who have the requisite PTIN, or how can I verify that my preparer is in compliance?
That's a very good question. The PTINs are, I believe, a public record. We put them on all of the tax returns that we sign. We're required to. And the listener, I think, is referring to last year was the first year where the IRS required PTINs for any tax preparer. Before, it was you could use your Social Security number. It was optional. Now they've created qualifications to get a PTIN. So if you're
not, PTIN is a
it's a prepare tax information number. It's an actual identification number. Instead of signing our Social Security numbers on a return, which we don't need to share our Social Security number, we had PTINs before they were required. Now they're required as a way to qualify people. If you're not a CPA, you have to take a test to qualify. So, or if you work for a CPA firm, there's some exemptions. So the way, I guess you would ask to see their PTIN. And I haven't been asked that question before. Mm-hmm. I'll have to check on how a taxpayer can verify that that's legitimate. you know that if they're a CPA firm that they're qualified because they get their PTINs by virtue of their CPA license. If it's somebody operating as an enrolled agent, they have to take the exam.
The exam, okay. An email from Scott. I opened a legal office this year working out of my home, and I'm the only employee. Is there a checklist that can help me account for all the credits and deductions I should take in 2011? Checklist.
I'm not sure about a checklist. If you look at a Schedule C, a copy of the form of a Schedule C, it will list categories of expenses that are eligible, and you're going to be relying on your own records. Since you say you're an employee, I wonder if you incorporated, in which case that's a whole different story. If you're just a sole proprietor, then you're really not an employee. You're the owner, and you're taking your draws. And so I would look, if you're not going to get professional help in preparing that return, then I would look at the Schedule C on the 1040, and it will have items there for you to check off.
Mm-hmm. And we got an email from Ira. I'm paying over $20,000 a year for private health aid for my mom, who is in a nursing home. However, she's on medical assistance for the basic cost of living in a nursing home, which comes out to more than $20,000 a year. Is there a way I can claim a deduction for the $20,000 for the health aid?
A health aid, it depends. If it's not a nurse and they're not providing assistance activities of daily living, first of all, for you to deduct it, she has to be your dependent. If she's not your dependent, then you have no basis to deduct it at all. So probably not.
And David, South Milwaukee, a quick question from you. Hi, David.
Great guest, great timing. I always hoped that you'd have a professional like this before the end of the tax year.
I'm so glad.
WPR came through again. I'm calling in regards to the inheritance from a trust. My mother was the primary beneficiary of a trust in which she received an allotment for decades, and she passed away, and the trust was terminated and distributions gone to the secondary beneficiaries. I inherited a little over $12,000. Is that taxable?
Principal is not taxable. What's taxable is income. So if what you got was a bank account or an IRA or stock certificates, those in themselves are not subject to income tax. It's only the earnings on those that are subject to the tax.
It came as cash.
It depends. If it represented any income, then that part is taxable.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. And, oh, my goodness, here we are out of time, Dale. It flew by. Thank you so much. And I hope we can do this again.
I would love to. Thank you for having me.
And Dale Kunin will be back. She is a certified public accountant, a certified information technology professional as well, and a partner with Wegner LLP, CPAs, and consultants in Madison. Great to have her along. And again, the Wegner folks we have a link to them at our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show if you want to take a look and see learn more about them. Tomorrow it's Garden Talk. We'll talk with a couple of authors of growing shrubs and small trees in cold climates.